All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, sometime in February. I don't really know anymore.
Is this still February?
What's the computer say? The computer says it's February 15th, 2018, so we're going to believe the computer for now because, you know, why not? Because the computer is always right. You always do what the computer says. 2 + 2 = 5.
Always.
The computer said so. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out just how rigged the game is, and today we found out just how much fun you can have with a fart soundboard on your phone in the executive bathroom. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking monkey shoulder.
Good
choice. Similar to monkey elbow, but more scotchy.
Okay. Cool. We have Sard. Sard, what are you drinking?
Shut up.
Fair enough, old staple. And Syntax. Syntax, what are you doing?
Today, I am pairing a 2008 Sauvignon Blanc with Oscar Mayer hot dogs and Wonder Bread.
Good man. I think. My actual knowledge of wine selection is pretty bad. Most of my wine collection comes from Walmart, so...
What do you think would pair well with beans and weenies?
It depends. Are they like the Van Camps? Beans and weenies? Because if they are, then so it, you know.
What about the Hillshire Little Smokies wrapped up in a croissant? Ooh, we stumped him.
Silence.
I was going with Hebrew Nationals and Bush's Grilling Beans, but Band Camps and Bar S could also work in a pinch.
We stumped him.
No, he's pulling up a wine list. Like, for this,
User,
we're going to need a Chateaubriand.
Oh, fuck, he lost his connection. Damn it. We scared him off. Well, bye, Syntax.
He'll be back and yeah. In greater numbers.
Well, we'll just need to build a virtual Syntax like we did for RU.
I have testicular cancer.
See? Sounds just like him. Now,
perfect.
Now, in 10 years, it'll say, and I died.
We'll just go through all the old IHN and Pure Decking recordings, and we'll build out a complete... RU soundboard and just have I don't know, Static or somebody hanging around being the virtual RU.
Garth RU. Yes.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So anyways, well, so much for figuring out our wine pairings.
User entered your channel.
Oh, there he is.
That was hilarious.
You hit the wrong button, didn't you?
No.
I mean, you lost your IRC. You lost your whole internet connection, it looks like.
I did, because I might be playing with another computer, and I might have sent a bunch of DDoS packets.
You just DDoSed yourself.
That's funny.
That's awesome. It's like, hey, what's this button do? I'm not using the internet right now.
I don't know how much of my wine rant you guys got.
None. We thought we stumped you.
Oh, no. Croissant and Little Smokies should be a Cab Franc or a Merlot, something French, a little drier. Same with beans and weenies, just because they're a little sweeter. You really should go something dry, but possibly Italian?
Fair enough. So, I forgot to say, I'm drinking a Jim Beam Red Stag tonight. So I was drinking my staple Newcastle, but that ran out, so we went for the bourbon. Speaking of, I just realized I was going to do something and I forgot. I was going to fill up the incident response plan, but that is currently in a location where that would be difficult to do, so we're not going to get to do that tomorrow. I guess we
no one needs an incident response.
Oh, you don't know that joke.
It's the name of the cup that he drinks bourbon out of.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's on my desk at work right now.
Is it huge?
It's pretty big.
Okay.
I think it's actually a beer stein.
Yeah, it holds like 64 ounces.
Yeah. Fill it with bourbon.
Yeah, that's a hell of an incident response plan.
Isn't it?
It depends on the size of the incident.
So, I don't know. The week I've been the last couple of weeks I've been having, it seems appropriate right now. So, anyways, let's move on to the first story here. This is from The Verge. Although I've seen it reported in several other places, and the Coinbase subreddit is full of this right now. So, a growing number of Coinbase customers are complaining that the cryptocurrency exchange withdrew unauthorized money out of their accounts. In some cases, this drained their linked bank accounts below zero, resulting in overdraft charges.
Oh, fuck.
In a typical anecdote posted on Reddit, one user said they purchased Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin for a total of $300 on February the 9th. A few days later, the transaction repeated five times for a total of $1,500, even though the user had not made any more purchases. That was enough to clear out the user's bank account, they said, resulting in fees. My bank account went from very comfortable to negative balance, not to mention the extra $5 charges, the overdraft fees, the user wrote, and as a result, my rent check bounced. My bank went further in the negative for an NSF charge for $25, and my landlord is not a nice person. I am freaking out. Coinbase representatives have been responding to similar complaints on Reddit for about 2 weeks, but the volume of complaints seems to have spiked over the last 24 hours.
In your channel timed out.
He did it again.
User entered
more DAuth packets.
Okay.
Hey, Syntax, guess what that script does? It kicks you off of TeamSpeak.
Jesus.
At the time of this writing, the front page of our Coinbase subreddit has mostly consisted of similar complaints. You drained my bank account and now I have nothing. Calling for class action lawsuit. What's going on? Should I be worried? Double charged. Withdrawals posted. What the fuck? Coinbase randomly took $100 out of my bank account. Well, officially broke. Charged 17 times $1,000 on his account. Wow. He spent $1,000 on Coinbase and they processed it 17 times.
Holy shit.
Oh, fuck.
I was thinking that seemed like it was an accident, but that just seems malicious almost.
Syntax! Oh, God, whatever he's running, he needs to figure it out. It sounds to me, knowing something about how a lot of these systems work, the transactions will go in a pending table in a database, which is kind of a holding place for the transaction to get picked up by automation to get processed. It sounds like they're not getting cleared out of there. So you go in and make a transaction for $100. That sets up a business automation job that's going to run at whatever interval, right? You know, sometimes they run hourly. Sometimes they run nightly. It just kind of depends on what they've built. Where it'll go out and do all the wire transfers, you know, based on whatever system they've hooked into for doing their payment processing. And it sounds like that's not getting cleared out. So it's just processing the same transactions over and over and over again. And it's probably generating new transaction codes for them every time. But if the database isn't working right, they're probably not getting stored anywhere, which makes them really difficult to track down in reverse.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if they're, like, restoring a database and replaying transaction logs.
Ooh, that could
and
be.
And re-triggering
that
stuff.
That could easily be the case as well. That could absolutely be the case. The issue started after a change occurred in the way credit cards classify digital currencies. According to a statement on Reddit from a Coinbase employee on February 4th, at that time, Coinbase was still trying to identify the issue. Users were asked to comment publicly on the thread with information about their double charges, including their bank and dates of transactions. That seems dumb.
Not on a public forum. You contact Coinbase and say, hi. Where do I fax this nice spreadsheet from my bank giving you the transaction numbers you gave my bank?
This morning, February 15th, another Coinbase employee wrote on Reddit that the unexpected charges are originating outside of our control and are related to charges from previous purchases. The charges are in the process of being refunded, the employee wrote, although he did not say whether the resulting overdraft charges would also be refunded. Of course they're not going to be. Coinbase is going to do everything they can to not pay out exactly what they should be paying out for this because given the way Bitcoin's operating, they probably don't have the capital to. Well, they got a whole bunch of VC money, though.
I don't know how liable they can hold individuals in that company, but...
That come from the bank anyways? They wouldn't have any control over that.
No,
your bank won't refund your overcharges if it wasn't their error. And this error is Coinbase running multiple transactions that they shouldn't.
You can
call it not your bank's error.
No, but you can call up the bank and claim fraud.
Yeah.
Because it is.
Yeah.
That is absolutely banking fraud. Now, it's not intentional.
And then your bank will just go after Coinbase for anything.
Yeah. They'll write
some of it off.
And they'll certainly put a halt on future transactions from that holding account. Usually you kind of want to make that a last resort when you're dealing with a company because enough of those make companies very difficult to deal with. But in this case, that might be exactly what you need to do. So Peter Kingry, a Coinbase user in Virginia, posted a screenshot of what he said were unauthorized charges to Coinbase totaling $931 with an additional $745 in bank fees. I am writing the Coinbase CEO, OCC, Barbara Comstock, my representative, and the governor of Virginia, he said in an email. Well, the governor ain't going to do shit.
State banking laws. Governor might try to get something passed.
I doubt
anything directly is going to happen.
No, but if he gets enough people complaining, that the government might do something. Another Coinbase user, Mike Baldestera, provided a screenshot of his bank showing repeated transactions totaling nearly $300. One charge was credited back to his account after 12 days, but then his account was again hit with another phantom. So they refunded it and immediately took it back, which has not been refunded yet. Coinbase also did not refund him for the overdraft charges he incurred, he said, and he received form letters in response to his complaints he filed through customer service. Others had experienced greater losses, he said in an email, but he wanted to share a story so others like himself are not caught off guard and left without money in their accounts. The problem appears to be that legitimate charges are duplicated. Syntax, did you kill the other box yet?
No. So I ended up killing the machine I was on.
Well, whatever works, I guess.
Well, no, I think I literally lost a wireless card at the same time.
Oh, dude.
So it might not have been what I was doing on the other box.
Well, it could be, or you could have fucked up the firmware of the wireless card, which certainly wouldn't be the first time a bug in one of those was found.
That's true. I just closed it and got mad and yelled a bit. Got me some more booze.
Yeah, that's always a good plan.
No.
So the problem appears to be legitimate charges are duplicated without authorization and appears to affect specific banks, including Scotia Bank and USAA, judging by user complaints. Today, I talked with my bank about the double charges I received from Coinbase on my Visa debit card, one Reddit user wrote. They said that the trend has been going on for 2 weeks and they are closely monitoring it. Coinbase, the San Francisco-based wallet and exchange, from receiving more blah, 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 Coinbase customer who's hit with two phantom charges for $100, resulted in $144 in overdraft. Dude, get a new bank. Total of $144 in overdraft fees? How did you get that?
Wow. He gets charged twice for $1,000 from Coinbase. He then goes buys a Snickers bar that he thinks he has money for, a gallon of gas that he thinks he has money for, a movie ticket. Those are $25 a pop when those return. Yep.
Gotcha.
Racking up $1,000 in overdraft fees when you think you have $2,000 in your checking account and you have nothing is easy and quick to do. If you're just making your monthly bill payments, like cable, whatever, going down the list, that's $25 a piece.
While the first $100 phantom charge was automatically refunded, the second $100 charge appeared at midnight last night. I go to it instantly, and sure enough, it's Coinbase taking money out of my account yet again, he said. He said it is doubtful that Coinbase will refund his overdraft fees because his experience with customer service has been so poor. He canceled his debit card because he was afraid of being erroneously charged by Coinbase again. Don't trust them to hold my money.
Reasonable.
For sure. Yeah, well, I mean, at a point, other than telling the bank it's fraudulent, please put a stop on this card, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
So Coinbase declined to comment on how many users are affected, what the underlying cause is, blah, 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 blah. Apparently, it's not the first time they've done it. They did it back in 2016. Company has been a busy week at temporary hold of PayPal payments, disabled adding new credit cards as payment options, released new product for merchants called Coinbase Commerce, and Bitcoin is back over 10,000 again. So, yeah. So, if you're a Coinbase user, I would not spend any money on Coinbase right now. Although you might try doing a withdrawal. See if they send your withdrawal multiple times.
Oh, you know they have a different system for that, and they don't let that one get fucked up.
We can charge the
There's
shit
somebody
out of people,
physically double checking that one.
Well, given how long it takes to do a withdrawal at a Coinbase, I believe it. Because a couple
of
times,
I wonder if it's the OCC is the governing body for this, because Bitcoin type exchanges are so new. I don't even know if they have a regulating body yet.
Well, it's certainly not FDIC insured. It's not. They're not a bank. No. I don't.
What if you go to the CFPB and just have them sort out the alphabet soup of who should be yelling at this company?
Yeah, I think CFPB might be the right one to go to at this point, because it's basically a I guess when it's in Coinbase, wouldn't it be a commodity?
It could be a commodity, but this is acting as an exchange when they're cashing it out. So well, that's what I'm thinking. Go with the CFPB and let them pick what alphabet soup goes and attacks this company.
Isn't Bitcoin going to be exchanged on one of the stock exchanges?
NASDAQ as a futures exchange is going to be treated as a commodity.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it should be the Commodities and Exchange Commission.
But the thing is, it's in this case, I don't think it's, but it's not so much exchanges. It's not like they're, it's not like you're getting more Bitcoin than you're ordering. They're literally just rerunning bank transactions multiple times.
Yeah. But still. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's
fraud.
That's just basic fraud, isn't it?
With NASDAQ, they're going with, we'll sell you $20 worth of Bitcoin today for what we think will be $1,000 worth of Bitcoin in 2 years. It's the future kind of a Bitcoin, the way a farmer kind of do orange futures and shit like that.
Yeah.
This isn't acting that way.
No, I think this is just Coinbase double and triple charging you for a product, or 17 times according to one of them.
Yeah, it's just it's a really bad point of sale system.
So, yeah, I personally, I wouldn't buy anything on Coinbase. I wouldn't buy anything on Coinbase now, period. And, any holdings you still have in there, I'd get them out, and then I'd go in and delete all your accounts out of their system, because obviously they're not managing it well. I got a Coinbase account, too, and guess what I'm going to be doing later today? So...
Oh, I thought you killed that after you saw how much it cost to buy a movie ticket through Coinbase.
Oh, I moved all the money. So that was Bitcoin. That was the transaction cost of Bitcoin. I don't move Bitcoin around anymore because fuck that noise. So, not when it costs $30 to move Bitcoin and you're only moving 10? Yeah, fuck that. It's like, you know, you think the transaction fee is going to be $5-6. Oh, no, you did it right after the spike. Fuck.
Oops.
Oh, that was an expensive movie. And the bad part is right after that, Bitcoin tanked. So the guy I paid didn't even get the $10 worth. Not really. Anyways. So, yeah. Coinbase, I think, has pretty much burned all of its goodwill, at least in the short term. This is basics 101. You don't triple charge people on credit card transactions, especially when people are buying thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Although, here's something to keep in mind. All of these stories have a similar trend, right? Like, my rent check bounced. I racked up $100 worth of overdraft fees. You know, now the one guy who, you know, they took $17,000 out of his account, okay. But most of these people are talking about $300-$500 draining their account, which means they didn't have that much money in the first place, and they're playing around with cryptocurrency exchanges.
Gives you their intelligence, well, or they're just trying to play the short game and, look, I'm a crypto millionaire.
Well, sure, if you got in at the right time. But, and, you know, hell, I made quite a bit of money off Bitcoin because I got in right before the last big jump. Hell, paid for all my Christmas presents with it. But
it was back up to 10,000.
Yeah.
Did another jump from 6 to 10.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, smart money would tell you to just hold what you got, especially when it's not like, it's not like I need the money for anything, right? Because I was literally treating it like gambling. But this sounds like a lot of people weren't. Like, they were thinking this was going to be their investment for the future, but they're still living paycheck to paycheck.
That's not smart at all, if you ask me.
So, I'm not...
I have some of my... Yeah, I have some of my retirement in Bitcoin.
Well, sure.
It's because I mined it when they were $10 a coin.
Well, sure. But at the same time, though... You're not, you know, you said you're some of your retirement. It's not like you're living paycheck to paycheck and putting half your money into crypto.
Oh, yeah, no. No, hell, I've put zero money besides electricity into crypto.
Oh, you did back when it was graphics cards?
Yep.
Yep.
Well, I did it back when, like, I had a couple of spare Arduinos. Like I said, back when it was $10 a coin.
Yeah, it was nothing to do it.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, look, I made things.
I wish I had just left that Bitcoin I mined when I was playing around with the Raspberry Pi miner.
Yeah.
I wish I just hadn't touched it. But no, of course, I had to move it around and play with it and put it in different things. And of course, that was the point of it. I wasn't treating it like it was anything real. I was just playing with the technology. But of course, if I just let it sit in a wallet, you know, I'd have a lot of money today.
Does everyone that played with Bitcoin ever?
Yeah, well, and that's what I did. I was like, ooh, I want to see if I can do this thing. And I'm like, oh, look, I did. And I just left the thing plugged in and went on to, like, my next thing. And then I went back to it, like, 9 months later and was like, oh, shit, thing is still plugged in. I wonder if it's still working. Sure enough, it was. I'm like, oh, hey, look, I have multiple coins. I'm like, oh, well, this is cool. I need this plug for something. So, like, I unplugged it, and I wish I would have left it. But, yeah, and they sat in a wallet, and I forgot about it for a while.
Now you have $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. Time to buy a house.
If only a house cost just $100,000.
Yeah, fair point. So...
Yeah, like I said, it's my retirement. If it's still there, awesome. If not, yeah, whatever. I'm not out anything.
But, so I guess kind of the broader point here is that I think crypto is, especially Bitcoin, is past the point where you're going to get stupid rich off of it by putting $10 in today and cashing it out in a year.
Yeah.
I think that ship has now officially sailed. Now, you can still make money on the cryptocurrency trading markets, or if you could set up a trading bot and buy low, sell high, or just do the whole drug wars thing and buy low, sell high manually, or if you could happen to find two exchanges that get out of sync and do the whole George Soros thing and buy currency at one level and then sell it at a different and live off the profit, which anybody who doesn't remember, that's how he made his money. He found some exchange loops on the British pound, and
yeah, he shorted the pound, and Britain shit a brick.
So
I don't think he's allowed in that country.
I think there's several countries he's not allowed in, but that's not the point. Anyways, though, you know, I there's still money to be made in crypto, but this idea that you're going to throw $10 off of your fast food job paycheck into there. And you know what? To be clear, I'm not knocking the people in the article who got charged multiple times, right? Especially the guy who, like, bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin and then got hit with it 17 times. That would hurt anybody.
Yeah.
You know, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the guy who, you know, they put $50 into crypto, and then because they ran it six times, their rent check bounced. It's like, dude.
Although, and also, might I say, fuck you to all you people that still think that graphics cards are the way to mine, because I still can't buy.
Oh, I know.
A,
my
a
God.
1080.
1080 Ti is like $1,300 last time I looked. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It was up to $2,500 a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, I was
pushing off a rebuild mainly because of this.
I was checking out eBay. It's like, you know what? I'll go without a gaming card for a while. What are my cards worth? You know, I seriously thought about putting my cards up.
Yeah, so I've decided that I'm going to stick with my 670 until shit drops, because fuck that.
Well, you know, AMD just put out their new line of the APUs, the Ryzens with the graphics card built into them, and apparently they're not bad. You know, I mean, they're not anywhere near a 1080 Ti. But if you're just trying to build a system while you wait for price on graphics to come down, maybe that's the way to go.
The problem was, the last thing that I was waiting to get in was to buy a graphics card. I had everything else, and I had it all built. And then when I looked at graphics cards, I'm like, I'm not paying $900 for a graphics card. And then they just kept going up, and I got real mad.
So I bought a 1060 back when that line first came out. And I'm like, I'll buy this for now, and I'll buy a 1080 down the line when I feel like spending more money, because I just didn't feel like spending that much money on a graphics card. It's like, when they're out for a bit, the price will go down. I still got that 1060, and I seriously looked at putting it on eBay.
That sucks. At least I'm... With my putting it off, I haven't started buying parts yet. I was just pricing shit, and I'm like, I'll wait till the graphics card goes down.
I think gaming laptops are going to be the way to go for a while, because that way you can get a graphics processor that doesn't cost, you know, as much as the laptop itself.
Yeah, right? Oh, fuck those guys.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here. So, yeah, bottom line, be careful with Coinbase right now. If you're using Coinbase, don't. Because apparently they're being stupid, and I'm have every intention of dumping all my anything I have left in there out and removing my accounts from their system, because I don't trust it not to dredge up a transaction I did, you know, 6 months ago and start running it again. Cygros is saying altcoins are still really good on GPUs, and Monero you can still do on your CPUs. So speaking of Monero. Cygros, good. That's a good segue to our next story. It's on Ars Technica. Actually, I think I already threw it in the chat. I did. A potent botnet is exploiting a critical router bug that may never be fixed. A fast-moving botnet that turns routers, cameras, and other types of internet-connected devices. You know, back when everybody just called it, you know, infrastructure. Now it's Internet of Things.
Internet of shit.
Or embedded devices. You just call it, you know. Your router was an embedded device. The little controller in your printer was an embedded device. Now it's Internet of Things. Thanks, marketing assholes. And other types of internet connected devices into potent tools for theft and destruction has resurfaced again, this time by exploiting a critical vulnerability that gives attackers control over as many as, 40,000 routers. Despite the high stakes, there is no indication that the bug will be fixed anytime soon, if ever. Satori, as the botnet has been dubbed, quickly made a name for itself in December when it infected more than 100,000 routers in just 12 hours by exploiting critical vulnerabilities in two models, one made by Huawei and one made by Realtek. Last month, Satori operators released a new version that infected devices used to mine digital coins, a feat that allowed attackers to mine as much as 30,000 worth of Ethereum based on prices of the digital coin was commanding at the time. In recent days, Satori has started infecting routers manufactured by Dasan Networks of South Korea. The number of daily infected routers is about 13,700, with 82% of them located in Vietnam. A researcher from the China-based NetLab 360 told Ars. Queries on the Shodan search index of internet-controlled devices show there is more than 40,000 routers made by Dasan. And that's only the ones indexed by Shodan. So there's more than that. The company has yet to respond to an advisory published in December that documented the code execution vulnerability Satori is exploiting, making it possible that most or all of the devices will eventually become part of the botnet. So, you know, the trick is you need a firewall for your firewall. Just go buy an old Cisco ASA off eBay. Oh, wait, those have a bug too.
Ouch.
So the fun thing about Shodan and this is a little off topic. We threw a honeypot on at my previous employer.
Yep.
It showed up on Shodan 6 hours later.
Yeah, Shodan's scanning all the damn time, and it's also pulling in information from other sources.
Yeah, Shodan's really fun. You can go into some really awesome, like, I no longer dive down Google rabbit holes. You know, if I really want something fun, spend a couple hours diving down weird holes on Shodan.
I've had good luck searching paste bin for Anon file links lately. If you want ways to get shit, I found lots of people's tax documents, some driver's licenses, all kinds of good shit in there.
Wow.
Just be careful, because there's some other shit in there you really don't want.
Yeah. So is this the same type of botnet that those guys used, 18 months ago?
You know, on the cameras and TV recorders? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a Techniarm device. They just, apparently the South Korean manufacturer is, like, not going to fix these routers.
Yeah. Did you ever hear what that botnet was originally used for? Or what it was built for?
No. No. I know they were mining servers. Monero with it at some point.
Yeah, they originally built it because they wanted to denial of service Minecraft servers.
I did read that somewhere.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Is that the Monero?
Yeah.
What, no? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, eventually it was used to mine Monero.
In Alaska, of all places.
That's funny. Not Monero. I meant Miri or whatever.
Mirai, but yeah.
Mirai, that's it.
So that's... I've been playing around. I found a distribution for the Raspberry called Diet Pi. And I noticed one of the options in there was a Minecraft server. It's like, really? On a Raspberry? I mean, we used to run a Minecraft server for our group, and it needed a lot of... It actually needed a fair amount of horsepower. I don't think a Raspberry is going to keep up with that, but it was on the list, so... I don't know. Maybe they've gotten better. I'm just thinking now, if you're DDoSing Minecraft servers and they're running on Raspberries, it's like, okay.
you look at it funny and it falls over.
It's like, what are you doing? I'm DDoSing a Raspberry with what? My printer? It's like, what are you DDoSing that Raspberry with? Xorg? So, anyways. We tried to contact Asan since December 8th, 2017. Researchers from Vulnerability Disclosures Service Security Team wrote in December 6th advisory. Repeated attempts to establish contact went unanswered. At this time, there is no solution or workaround for this vulnerability. An email sent Wednesday... Noam Rothos, CTO of Secure Team's parent company, Beyond Security, wrote. We tried to contact him several times. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's just the same note. Okay. So, anyways, a lot of these fly-by-night over, one or two, router manufacturers where they just grab a cheap board, flash a firmware on it, dump them on the market, and then just kind of disappear. These guys never get fixed, right? So now these botnets are taking advantage of them. And honestly, probably the best way to go for a home firewall router is probably still going to be pfSense build of some sort. I have seen people who take a Raspberry or Tinker board or something along those lines and stick a USB NIC on it for the second NIC and run a router on it, run an open VPN on it. Not open VPN, pfSense on it, I should say. Because apparently there is a build out there for ARM now. There's also a few other builds for doing firewalls on the Raspberry, or you can just figure out how IP tables works. It's not that user friendly, but it works.
Yeah, so, it's not that user friendly, but it's also not that hard.
No, it's not. There's plenty of guides out there of how to do it, especially for just a basic setup. If you're wanting to do port forwarding and stuff like that, okay, a little bit more work, but I mean, still, it's just firewall rules. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Psychro says it's not rocket surgery. No, it's not. You want to rocket surgery is one thing. Rocket surgery while the rocket is running on the other. that's what I've been dealing with at work lately. Anyways, so
I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, I don't blame you. Go out, party, get drunk, have fun. Next article is from Gizmodo. and is just sad. 119,000 passports and photo IDs of FedEx customers found on an unsecured Amazon server. The good old S3 bucket, ladies and gentlemen. Thousands.
Hey, you want to post that link? Today.
Yeah.
I thought Amazon was doing things to alert people that their shit was open to the public.
Yeah, they did.
They were supposedly...
You have to log in and look into it and, you know, decide that you care.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
So here we go. Thousands of customers were exposed after the company left scanned passports, driver's licenses, and other documentation on a publicly accessible S3 server. The scanned IDs originated from countries all over the world, including the United States, Mexico, Canada, Australia, Saudi Arabia, Japan, China, and several European countries. The IDs were attached to forms that included several pieces of personal information, including name, home addresses, phone numbers, and zip codes. Right in time for tax season, ladies and gentlemen. The server, discovered by researchers at Cromtech Security Center, was secured as of Tuesday. Because, you know, when people called them on their shit. But not until after all this shit was dumped out onto, you know, all of the file sharing shit. According to Comtech, server belonged to Bongo International. Why would you name your company that? Bongo International LLC, a company that aided customers in performing shipping calculations and currency conversions, among several other services. Bongo was purchased by FedEx in 2014 and renamed FedEx Cross Border International a little over a year later. Then the service was discontinued in April 2017 after a preliminary... Yeah, so literally...
Because it was broken.
Yeah, in other words, nobody bothered looking at what was still sitting in those public S3 buckets. And I've talked to developers who think public S3 buckets are fine, by the way. It's like, oh, nobody's going to guess those URLs. It'll be fine. You can put people's credit reports in there. It's no big deal.
Security
no!
Security by obscurity. Everyone does it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck it.
You have
it.
To know the URL.
Every link in your corporate Box account can be a public link. It's fine. Nobody's going to guess those. Never mind when they get indexed by Google.
I'm but not that'll bitter. Never happen.
I'm not bitter at all.
Google doesn't index things.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
So here's the best statement. After a preliminary investigation, we can confirm that some archived Bongo International account information located on a server hosted by a third-party public cloud provider is secure, said FedEx in a statement to Gizmodo. The data was part of a service that was discontinued after acquisition of Bongo. FedEx added, there's no indication that the data being misappropriated. Its investigation in the matter is ongoing. There's no indication. You know what that means? We didn't turn logging on the S3 bucket because it's not on by default.
Oh, god damn it.
Seriously.
Like, that's okay.
Anybody who's ever set up Amazon S3 buckets, Cycros is not here. Cycros is in the IRC. Syntax, you can back me on this.
Oh, yeah.
Amazon S3 buckets are public by default and do not log.
Yeah, and there's a ton of things just kind of open. Because why not? Because Amazon... Because the people that are actually running... So, okay, my little rant on S3.
Go for it.
S3 was started as a, hey, this seems fun. Let's try this thing. And they did. And they're like, oh, look, it works pretty good. All right. Like, smart people are using this thing for, like, neat and interesting things. Then, all of a sudden, they went, oh, look, we can make money at this. Like, we're making money at this. Oh, shit. Okay, cool. Let's, like, market this thing, but not fucking change anything. So they're still under the assumption that smart people are using it.
But they're not.
But they're not. Yeah.
So this the thing with S3 that drives me nuts, S3 was not designed as a general file server. S3...
No.
Was designed to host static content for web pages. Images. It was meant to put images and style sheets for dynamic web pages. It's preferably load balanced web pages, things where you're not always going to have. The idea was if you're building the next Flickr, you'd put the photos in the thing. And they.
Or if you wanted to do some really weird distributed. Computing for some science stuff.
Yeah, they never designed it with business data in mind. So, there's no indication of the database being misappropriated. It means there's no fucking logs. And having built S3 instances, I can tell you it's not on by default because you have to pay for it. The logging for S3, if you want to turn it on, you have to turn on the LogWatch functions and the CloudTrail functions, and they charge you for that. So, of course, there's no evidence. There's no evidence because they didn't bother turning on the damn logging. And nobody was keeping an eye on what was in this thing, or the fact that Amazon was probably giving them warning, saying, hey, you have an a public S3 bucket. Are you sure this is what you mean to do? Because the company was defunct. So, oh, Psychros is like, I've never played with Amazon, just Slackware. Sorry, dude, I misspoke. I was looking at the IRC when I was thinking syntax. Anyways, I've got like 5 monitors around me. I'm going to get confused every once in a while. I've been drinking and I'm getting old. It's not lies. I'm not getting old. I'm immortal. I will live forever.
Smoke weed every day.
Wait, that was not the right sound effect. Not as bad as the last show we did where I hit the wrong sound effect. That was hilarious. Anyways, according to CromTech, more than 119,000 scanned documents were discovered on the server. Why do they keep calling it a server? It's an S3 bucket. Everybody knows what one of those are. Smoke weed is life extension.
That's it, man.
So, anyways, that worked surprisingly well. Playing the game over sound effect and just like taking my finger off the button at the same time. That works.
That's it, man.
Smoke weed every day.
That's it, man.
That works perfect. Anyways, let's see. Bob Diachaco, CromTech's lead head of communication, said it's essentially anybody who might have used Bungo services between 2009 and 2012 might have had their identity compromised. It's possible data's been exposed online for years. Highlight cases of why, you know, people need to check their shit. Anyways, next article is from the Register, and I'm not going to read it. I'm going to summarize it because it's funny, and there's not really much to discuss in there other than it's funny. So Microsoft is making a new SKU of Windows 10, and they're calling it Windows Workstation. And this it's going to support more core counts, the high-end Xeons. They're actually intending this thing to support workstation PCs, where you would normally do a server operating system, right? You know, up to 6 terabyte of RAM. No, I read that wrong. They're talking comparing it to Linux. It'll have the REFS. It supports Xeon and Opteron machines with up to 4 physical CPUs and up to 6 terabytes of RAM. Because, and the article talks about a little bit of history about how Microsoft started arbitrarily limiting what the workstation or desktop versions of Windows can do so that people wouldn't use Windows Workstation as servers. Or, you know, the desktop SKUs of Windows as servers, because the server versions of Windows cost thousands of dollars for the enterprise versions, whereas your desktop version comes with the Dell laptop. The big selling point of Windows 10 Workstation is it will no longer include Candy Crush installed by default. Crickets?
What will I do when I'm at work?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have the hallelujah button?
I don't.
Oh.
I don't. I've got this.
That should be default.
How many stories do we do on decking where the hallelujah button is appropriate?
All of them.
Holy shit.
That works too.
Oh, no. I've got the closest thing on the soundboard to the hallelujah button.
Na 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 sard. Brilliant.
So, yeah, literally they're putting out a SKU of Windows that's meant for workstations, and it's going to be the best-selling version ever because it's not going to include all the shovelware. Cubes OS, people, look into it. Anyways, because you can virtualize Windows on it fairly cleanly, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah, the only thing you're not going to do with it is game, unfortunately. Because even with the virtualized Windows 10, you got to do the whole, you know, pass-through thing. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
Who games anymore?
Anybody playing Fortnite? Which is actually fairly decent.
I've heard.
Let's see. What was that? Emails from work at 10 o'clock at night. That's what you want. Yes, cubes can do pass-through. It can do pass-through, but it's not intended for it. So, and you still have to do the whole... Ooh! Has anybody tried the Looking Glass project on cubes yet? That might be worth exploring. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. Looking Glass is the open source project to install a... this kind of violates cubes because you're messing with memory. It installs a frame buffer driver in your virtual machine for Windows to capture the output of your graphics card and use DMA to transfer it over to the host so that you can do give it a graphics card and have a graphics performant VM that's sharing a monitor with your main system.
Oh.
Syntex, you should look into that. You will enjoy it.
Doing that now.
Yeah, it was on the Level 1 Techs forum, but we talked about it on Decking like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, something like that.
This next one just makes me, I want to scream.
Yeah, you should. The next one is from TechCrunch. Onavo project, the VPN client from data security app maker geared acquired by Facebook back in 2013, has now popped up in the Facebook iOS app itself under the banner Protect in the navigation menu. Clicking through on Protect will redirect Facebook users to the Onavo Protect VPN and security app listing on the App Store. It's unclear what percentage of Facebook's iOS user base is seeing the option or which market it's may have had the listing before, as there's been little reporting on the feature. We do know that it's not the first time Onavo's project has shown up in the Facebook app. It was apparently spotted back in 2016 in the UK. The company also tells TechCrunch it's been available on Android app for this around the same time. Marketing Onavo within Facebook itself could lead to a boost in users for the VPN app, which promises to warn users of malicious websites and keep information secure, like bank account or credit card numbers as you browse. But Facebook did not buy Onavo for its... security protections. Instead, Onavo's VPN allows Facebook to monitor user activity across apps, giving Facebook a big advantage in terms of spotting new trends across the larger mobile ecosystem. For example, Facebook gets early heads up about apps that are becoming breakout hits. It can tell which are seeing slowdowns in user growth, and it sees which apps' new features appear to be resonating with users. So in other words, if you use Facebook's if you use Facebook's VPN, Facebook knows what you're doing on your phone. So, you know, don't.
Yeah. So, just, like, okay. I know I'm probably the only fucking weird guy that I'm like, yeah, terms of service, I'm going to read that thing.
You don't want to have your ass sewn to the lips of another man, South Park style.
Exactly. And theirs is horrible. Because it says, like, in their toss, at least it did when I read it several months ago, that it was, but they're like, yes, we are going to, you know, keep track of your browsing history for targeted advertising and other security features.
Isn't that what most people say they want to use a VPN to avoid?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't use Facebook's VPN. I'm just going to say this. Don't use Onavo. Not use Facebook's VPN.
It was also buried on like the 20th page or something of that terms of service. It was amazing.
Wow. Okay.
Because whenever you get a terms of service that's longer than like 2 pages, I start to get, you know, suspicious.
Personally, I use private internet access. They claim they don't keep logs, and since there's been some articles about how the FBI got pissed at them because they didn't keep logs, I tend to believe it.
Yep, I use them as well.
It could be marketing fluff placed out there to lure you into a false sense of complacency, but in this case, what are you gonna do?
Really?
They
busted because they did send logs.
No, that was not private internet access. That was a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We did the story.
Confused with something.
Yeah, okay. PIA, I first heard about them at DEF CON a couple of years ago because they had a booth, and I went, wait. Now, you're either really cool because you're at DEF CON or
a total plan.
Real shitty. Like,
I wish their website didn't look like a click art, you know, total plant FBI fest, because it kind of does.
Oh, it does. Well, they're Canadian.
I love that. That's it. We're suave when you need them. Because it really does. It reads totally like a, you know, like a marketing. We're trying to target your audience of wanting security. Here's the click art. I mean, it's like, yeah. Come on. Notice I said click art and not clip art. That's an inside joke. If you don't get it, you don't know your internet history. I discovered a whole bunch of people on my new security team have never heard of NetHack. They did not know what it was.
Really?
Yeah. It's like people. It's like people. I don't know their history. They
again. I'm in the job market.
Well, I sent you the link.
Yeah. They, oh, I might have to get that from you again later.
Oh, scroll back up in the chat.
No, because remember my box died.
Oh, right. Fair enough. Give me, yeah, after the show, we'll take care of that. But, Okay. Yeah, I was playing Pixel Dungeon on my phone, and they said, ooh, what's that? Is that, you know, they didn't know what it was. I'm like, oh, that's just NetHack on the phone. What's NetHack? Excuse me? Aren't you in the security field? You don't know what NetHack is? No? It's like one of them. It's like, you're as old as I am. You know what NetHack is. No, I don't.
Oh, Jesus.
They'd never heard of it. So, it's like, really? Damn. People making me feel old. It's like, come on.
That's like not knowing Tetris.
He's right. It's about that old.
It is.
It's like, geez, how do you not? No, they didn't know what roguelikes were either. It's like, do you know what Diablo is? Yeah, I've played Diablo 3. Oh, my God.
Oh, you, Jesus.
You didn't play Diablo 2? No? Diablo 1?
It's like when you ask people what was, like, the first real, you know, first-person shooter. And everyone says Doom, and they're all wrong.
No, they say Halo.
Wolfenstein?
Yeah, Wolfenstein.
Oh, I would hope they'd not.
No, Wolfenstein wasn't the first. It was the Colossal Maze Adventure. Maze 3D.
Oh, yeah, fine. Yeah, but that one sucked.
It did suck, but...
So it doesn't count.
But no, I did. In the same conversation, I told the same guy to spit the binky out of his mouth, and, you know, what was the first-person shooter, and he said Halo. Like, oh my God.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Nope. Fire. You should be fired.
Yeah. Well, you know, other than that, he's got the best customer service skills of anybody on the team because he's not jaded yet. He's, like, still happy and helpful when people ask him for shit. The rest of us are like, eh, go away. Security says no, remember? So... Yeah, Psychros, I think he thought that was a sex act. Anyways. Oh, I already threw that at the torrent freak. Last article for tonight. Court dismisses Playboy's copyright claims against Boing Boing. Now, this is amusing because we're talking about Playboy and Boing Boing, but the actual legal ruling is pretty cool here. A California district court has dismissed Playboy's copyright infringement complaint against Boing Boing. Playboy's allegations that the popular blog induced or contributed to copyright infringement by publishing hyperlinks is not strong enough, Judge Olgun writes. The complaint is dismissed with leave, meaning the magazine publisher can file an improved version in 2 weeks. Or within 2 weeks. In early 2016, Boing Boing co-editor Zinni Jardin published an article in which she linked to an archive of every Playboy centerfold image till then. Kind of amazing to see how our standards of hotness, the art of commercial erotic photography, have changed over time, Jardin commented. While the link material undoubtedly appealed to many readers, master of understatement, point freak there, Playboy itself took offense to the fact that the infringing copies of their work were being shared in public. While Boing Boing did not upload or store the images in question, the publisher filed a lawsuit late last year. the blog's parent company, Happy Mutants, was accused of, you know, we make fun of company names, but Happy Mutants is not bad, really, as far as company names go, especially when you name your company Bongo, like we were talking about with that FedEx report. Anyways, was accused of various counts of copyright infringement with Playboy, claiming that it exploited their Playmates images for commercial purposes. Boing Boing saw things differently. With the help of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, it filed a motion to dismiss, arguing that hyperlinking is not copyright infringement. Hear, hear. If Playboy would have had their way, millions of other internet users could be sued for linking, too. And the reason I agree, besides the porn jokes, hyperlinking cannot be considered copyright infringement because pointing out where something is to somebody could then be considered theft.
Yeah.
Literally, if somebody walks up and asks you, hey, where's the nearest 7-Eleven? Oh, it's right over there. And you give him directions to 7-Eleven, then he robs the place. Congratulations, you're on trial, too, for theft.
Yeah.
Fuck that. No. You hyperlinking cannot be copyright infringement. It has to be whoever's responsible for the server hosting the content. Because otherwise, you destroy the internet. Because if you can be held accountable...
Makes sense to me.
No, seriously. If you can be held accountable for the content on a web page that you've linked to, because that's what they're doing, copyright aside, that's what they're doing, you are responsible for the content that you link to. If you're going to make that claim, I have to shut Galaxy 15 Radio down right now because of the thousands of links I have in the show notes from this show. Because there's no way I can be responsible for the content on all of those websites. But that's what you're saying. You're saying if you hotlink, you are responsible for the content.
Google.
Yeah, Google could not operate.
That's engine does.
That is a fantastic point.
And might I say, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, if you're on Amazon Prime and you're doing the, like, every time you buy something, it donates to a charity, they're on there. You should do that.
Actually, Cycros in the chat has a fantastic point. It would be trivial to figure out that somebody has linked to an image or something on your webpage, replace it with illegal content, and then just complain. I mean, talk about an easy way to set people up.
God.
Yeah. Jeez.
So. Ooh,
the dude that swapped out his art for Goatsy.
Yeah, that's Jason Scott. He runs textfiles.com.
Jason Scott would so do that. Well, I don't think it would narc on people, but it would still be hilarious for him to, I don't know, copyright one of his images.
So, first of all, textfiles.com is awesome because they have all the old BBS shit archived there. There's tons of images and stuff like that.
And
if you ever want to watch a really good DEF CON talk, he did one about how he got sued for $10 billion.
Oh, my God, that one's so funny.
He's gotten sued over so much shit, though.
Oh, yeah, the Angel Death has been sued many times.
But he... what Madman's referring to is a fantastic story. Pretty much, he ran a big image archive on textfiles.com, and people started linking directly to his images for MySpace profiles, specifically the themes for MySpace profiles, which I think were mostly CSS and some HTML file. So there were companies selling themes that linked to his images. So he sent them notes saying, please stop doing this. You're destroying my bandwidth bill, which, of course, you know, they just ignored. So he said, well, fine. Fuck you. He swapped out the background images because he had like some awesome pictures of like the Reaper and some artwork and shit like that. So he just replaced a whole bunch of links or a whole bunch of files with Goatsy. He went into his own archives and, you know, he'd rename them something else and just fix the links in his own web pages. So they would load it fine. And then he put Goatsy in all the original URLs. Causing all these MySpace pages to, you know, just be displaying Goatsy and get banned and, you know, all
That's
this
awesome.
Other shit. He got threatening letters demanding that he restore the images from the company selling themes and shit like that. I mean, he gets some just absolutely crazy shit.
Yeah. They're selling his bandwidth. He's not allowing... That's... Yeah.
Yeah.
He hacked their MySpace. He hacked their MySpace.
Yeah, they threatened him with hacking.
Wow.
That's not how that works.
That's not how any of this
works.
Yeah,
that's not how any of that works.
But
hey, he was Elite's Hacksaws and broke into their MySpace. Thousands of MySpaces.
Oh, no, it was one of the companies that was selling the themes was saying, you have to restore these images, you're costing us business, and we're going to sue you. So it's just
Did he do a talk on that somewhere?
Yes, he did.
I was actually seen that there. One. I want to see that.
I was actually there for that talk. It was at the first DerbyCon.
The DerbyCon?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a video.
I'm going to see if I can find it.
And it's an amazing talk, because not so much because he's saying anything weird, just the sheer arrogance of the people who got pissed at him for switching out these images on his own server. It would be like me going over to Madman's apartment and getting upset to the point of filing a lawsuit because he moved a couch and put, right. I don't know, a picture of a sex doll where the previous couch was.
Well, I mean, you can't get mad at home for that.
Anyways. So, yesterday, U.S. District Court Judge Fernando Olguin ruled on the matter. In a brief order, he concluded that an oral argument is not needed and that based on the arguments from both sides, the case should be dismissed with leave. This effectively means that Playboy's complaint has been thrown out. However, the company is offered a lifeline and is allowed to submit a new one if they can properly back up their copyright infringement allegations. The court will grant defendant's motion and dismiss plaintiff's first amended complaint, with leave to amend. In preparing for the second amended complaint, plaintiffs shall carefully evaluate the contentions set forth in the defendant's motion. For example, the court is skeptical that the plaintiff has actually sufficiently alleged facts to support either its inducement or material contribution to theories of copyright infringement. In other words, not their server, dude. It's kind of cool when you get a judge who actually understands what's going on here. It's like they pointed out, hey, look, there's shit happening over there. And, you know, it's like, oh, you can't tell people that. So, anyways, now I'm just kind of curious. Let's see. The hyperlink to the article still exists. And the Imgur album is gone. Oh, it was a link to an... That's even better. It was a link to an Imgur album. Well, it's gone. That's a
shame.
Why
did they sue them?
Yeah, really? Why didn't you go after Imgur?
Yeah, they're hosting it.
So,
well, because that would make fucking sense, and that's not how these people work.
Oh, some of the linked articles off of the Boing Boing. Apparently, they killed all the deep fake stuff. Yeah, Reddit shuts down deep fake subreddit, home to face swap porn and other stuff. They're literally outlawing photoshopping somebody else's face onto porn now. That's weird. I'm trying to figure out how that's illegal.
It could be seen as defamation.
I guess.
Especially if it's done well.
No, I think we did a story about them shutting that down, didn't we?
All I know is
we've
that
talked
when
about
I
the
was...
deepfake stuff on Decking a couple of times, because at one point we found the Trump Merkel thing.
Oh.
Which is pretty creepy.
Yeah, all I know is that when I was a young lad in high school, let's just say that there might have been some Melissa Joan Hart images.
Was Clarissa explaining it all for you there?
Yeah, she was.
Oh, I only know that because I was watching a YouTube video earlier that somebody had taken a bunch of GIFs and put music to the background of them, and they put that that song to the opening of the show. It was just like, fuck, that's awesome.
That's amazing.
So, anyways, let's do... Go ahead, Mehmet.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that I haven't found the video from DerbyCon yet, but I did find a text file on textfiles.com entitled Freedom, Justice, and a Disturbingly Gaping Ass. So
that's the write-up. I think that's probably the original write-up he did.
Yeah, I haven't found the DerbyCon talk yet, but this looks pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I'm misremembering because I've listened to a couple of his talks. I definitely listened to his talk at DerbyCon, and I asked him about the text files thing, and he didn't really want to elaborate on it. So. Because I know mostly he was wanting to talk about his work he did with archive.org. But anyways, yeah, it's still hilarious. Anyways, let's not hit the button early. Let's do this. Well, I've switched up how I'm doing this. I used to do the sound effects all with just the mouse, and I've got a MIDI Fighter 3D. I don't remember why I bought the MIDI Fighter 3D, but it was in a closet, right? So it's like, oh, why don't we use that? It's an arcade button grid. And it's way faster than the mouse to trigger the sounds. Yeah, so, you know, you just kind of run the finger over it, and you get all kinds of stuff. So, yeah. Then there's videos of people playing these things who actually know what the fuck they're doing. It's like, wow, you're making music with that. That's awesome. Let me try that. Oh, no, it's just a whole bunch of, you know, Alex Jones sound clips. Anyways, so. The first link I have for Dojo tonight is from Medium, and it is a write-up that, oh God, I'm going to butcher this name, Alessandro Cusato did on properly setting up SSH to send an email alert whenever somebody logs into it. So if you're setting up an SSH server on the internet, this is how to hook into PAM, and he's got a few good guidelines on here on like setting up FeldaBand, you know, changing the port and all that good shit. But he actually has a guide on here of setting up SendMail with PAM so that any time that somebody logs in successfully to the SSH server, you get an email about it, which could be a way of tracking, hey, you know, your SSH server just got hacked. But at the same time, you know, he even points out this is not securing your SSH server. This is just giving you notifications that people are using it. So
yeah,
it's a good idea.
Awesome, though.
It is a very good idea.
It's just another layer.
Yes.
On top of it. That's awesome. I'll use the shit out of that.
Yeah, I probably will too, because I've got some stuff I need to get going. So anyways, though, it's a fantastic write-up. It's well done. And he's got some good info in there. So definitely it's a good way to go. Setting up the send mail to shoot you a notice whenever somebody hits your SSH server is probably a good idea. If nothing else, you get the email notice that, hey, you know, you just logged into your own server. And that way, if you forget about something and you never see it go off, you can at least have a shot at reacting to it before your systems get, you know, totally pwned. So,
right.
Don't use password SSH servers on the internet. Use keys, people. At least take some longer to crack. Actually, I've been meaning to play around with. I got a new YubiKey, and you can put open PGP keys on it. So I've seen a guide out there for putting your SSH keys on the YubiKey. It's like, that seems kind of cool. I want to try that. So
that's cool. Yeah, I've seen and heard about those YubiKeys and stuff, but I've never known anyone that has one. So I'd be interested in
if you play with it for a while,
you do a dojo.
Yeah, I've played with several. Oh yeah, they're fairly straightforward. At least the earlier ones are. They have a little customization tool you run. You can either set it up with their servers, where it just does the second factor part of an authentication, or you can set them up to pump out a static string, because they show up to the system as a USB keyboard. So you can either have it do a challenge response kind of thing, where it sends some serial information to it, and it'll pump out a...
automatically plug it in.
Yeah, you just plug it in, and it shows up as a keyboard. So the other way you set it up is just to, you know, you can put a crazy complex password on there, and when you tap the little touch sensor, it'll just type it out for you.
Okay. I don't want to hijack decking, but I'd like to talk to you about that sometime. That sounds cool.
Yeah, they're pretty neat to play with. I wish they weren't so damned expensive, though. It's like $40 bucks for a single key. It's like, really? That makes it a very hard sell at work. So,
yeah. Well, and not to mention, I imagine integrating it with applications and stuff is the real bread and butter of it. I'm not sure how
several systems actually already support it. A lot of the big name guys already support it. Okta, that kind of stuff already has it built in, and they've got plugins put out for, you know, Windows, Linux boxes, stuff like that. So. It's not that hard, but let me rephrase. It's easier than RSA keys if you've ever done those. You know, managing all the fucking individual certificate files per blister pack of freaking tokens, and I'm not bitter.
I was gonna say, show me on the doll, you know, where the RSA key touched you, Morbs.
It's not like the RSA encryption hasn't been broken or anything. I mean, it's still super secure.
But. Yeah. Oh, no, I may have had to manage an RSA server or two in my time. They are not fun.
No. No, I actually have a really amazing shirt put out by Duo Security, actually, which I think is even better.
I do like Duo. Duo is actually a decent product.
Oh, yeah.
They get pricey, though.
They do. But because of marketing like this, I'm willing to pay it. So it has an outline of an RSA tag, and where the numbers should be, it just says fail.
Well, considering RSA has actually figured out that like 13 different governments bugged their corporate offices. It's like somehow, because I, you know, we had one of their guys at a talk I went to 6 years ago, back when they first got popped. And he was like, we still haven't figured out how we got popped, because those keys are stored on a laptop that's only put on the network once a week when people do things. And it's kept in a hermetically sealed, you know, Faraday cage room. So, but after they got hacked, they started disassembling all of their offices and that room. And they found, like, they're pretty sure 13 different companies have been bugging devices in their buildings. It's like,
holy
fuck.
Shit. Yeah.
So.
Well, and see, in that case, that's when you absolutely want to be the second best company out there.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to be the target.
Yeah.
So. That's a good point. It's like, here's how why we're going with the second best vendor rather than the best. That's awesome. That's a good argument, actually.
Yeah. Like, case in point, Duo.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like Duo. I've used them for a while on some different projects, and I just wish they weren't quite as pricey as they are, because that's killed a few projects for me where a company didn't want to pay for it.
You just have to pay for that second best.
Yep. So the last article I have for tonight for Dojo is from ghacks.net. And there's been some plugins written for Chrome and Firefox that if you are not on the approved browser for certain platforms, you can't... Okay, so common knowledge on Netflix, if you're not on the approved browser for your platform, which is Internet Explorer on Windows, Chrome on Chrome OS, and Safari on Mac, the best you can get is a 720p stream. If you're on the approved browser, you get 1080p. And I think Chrome pretty much gets 1080p anyways, because it pretends to be on Chrome OS no matter what your platform is. But anyways, so somebody put out a plugin for both Chrome and Firefox that makes sure that you will get 1080p. On Netflix, which is kind of cool, especially for people doing the Linux thing, or if you got the Kodi box or something going like that, where it's kind of hard to get, you know, the 1080p Netflix going. So I'm hoping we see more things that just like say fuck it, lie to Netflix and get the 1080p stream, because I'm pretty sure that's what it does.
Well,
didn't they finally migrate away from Silverlight and that's all HTML5 now?
They did, but they're still limiting 1080p playback, and I imagine it has to do with copyright. Copyright agreements.
Yeah.
So actually, later in the article, they just flat out say, the developer of Netflix 1080p extension explains how the extension works on the project's GitHub page. Basically, what it does is adds the 1080p playback profile into the browser while on Netflix so that it becomes available. So yeah, they're just putting the link in, because Netflix's interface hides it. But
going back to an older one, so PIA... now has servers where you can VPN and stream Netflix.
I've never had a problem streaming Netflix on PIA.
So you weren't geo-restricted?
No.
Is it like the same thing?
Oh, so you can
watch
Star Trek Discovery because you pretend to be in Europe.
Exactly.
Well, I assume that works with YouTube then, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and like they also have one in UK where you can go to the BBC and go to their iPlayer and be like, yeah, no, I totally live in Norfolk and here's my postcode. And yes, I pay TV taxes. Cool. Give me all the free BBC. Like, it doesn't even ask you for a name.
So wait, with the Netflix one, if your account is based in USA, don't you need to set up an account in Britain to make it work?
Nope.
Nice. May have to play with that. Especially since I apparently have all the components. So, anyways, okay. that's all I've really got for tonight. Madman, closing thoughts.
I have nothing.
All right, fair enough, if that's the way you want to go. Sard, future news.
Wait, what show is this?
Well, hey, Madman just said I have nothing, so obviously we're going back into that mode.
Oh, okay.
Suave isn't here to threaten to beat me up, so it's fine. Dude's fucking tall. If he says he's going to beat me up, I'm at least concerned.
You're running. Yeah.
But he'll say he's sorry after every time he punches you in the face.
Yeah.
Goddamn Canadians.
It's like a law, right? No, man, I don't know. I guess two-factor everything.
All right, Syntax, we're 0 for 2 on the future news / closing thoughts. Let's go for it, dude.
So tonight in future news, every major consultancy is going to start laying off their security staff and giving it to trained monkeys.
Things will end well.
I'm not fucking bitter at all.
Can't a monkey put everything in buckets for you anyway?
Well, in Amazon, in S3 buckets, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
So. Oh, shit. Anyways, where's the closing slug on the text file? You'd think I'd know this by now. We've been doing this how long? Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. I briefly considered actually setting up like a Squarespace account and moving the G15 site there just so I didn't have to deal with WordPress anymore. If I need to figure out how to archive all the old shows and show notes and shit like that in a way that makes sense so that... Because I would like...
Textfiles.org.
Say what?
Textfiles.org.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, hell, I'm wondering how many of those links even still work anymore if you go back to like the old shows. We've only been doing this since, like, what, 2012, 2011? Something like that?
Something like that.
I don't remember how long we've been doing decking now. It's been a while.
3.5 weeks.
Well, it feels like it tonight, doesn't it? but, no, I need to figure out something. It's not just a matter of hosting them. I'm not worried about hosting them. Most of them are actually still up on the existing site. It's just they're not organized, like, at all. They're just kind of there, and because I've changed the system hosting some of the shows a couple of times, it's like difficult to track down what's where. Because like some of the shows are in the WordPress link, some of them's in the podcast link generator thing. You know, and I don't even have the full IHN archives; I've only got part of that. I need to get with Sard. We need to figure out how to fix some of these archives. Figure out how to get them up somewhere and what to do with them. Plus, the show notes for decking, and that makes things weird. And the fact... Oh, yeah. Yeah, for the first few years of the show, the joke was I would give the wrong date every show. That's a listing won't help.
Yeah, we just have to go with a modified date on the file system. If that's wrong, then we're fucked.
I moved them a few times, so that's probably wrong.
Okay, I gotta go. Love you guys. Bye.
Have fun.
Later.
So, anyways, yeah, we need to figure this shit out, what we're going to do with it. And I did briefly consider Squarespace just because it'd be like, you know, that'd be easier. I don't know that it's worth paying for, but it would be easier. Anyways, oh, yeah, the site, the subreddit, IRC, and the IRC tonight. Myself, Sard, Cycros, Iron Angel, and Madman. Yeah, we try to start 9 o'clock Central. Usually we're a little bit late. NeoCities. Oh, GeoCities. Yeah, we'll host it up on GeoCities. That'll work. Why not?
Fuck your GeoCities.
Oh, NeoCities. NeoCities.com. No, that's a thing. I thought he was mistyping GeoCities. well, whatever, right? So we'll figure it out. That's all I got for tonight. Anybody have anything before I hit the Pac-Man sound? Taking that as a no.